Good Thursday morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside, as always, Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, Greg Jennings is with us. We got a fun show for you today, among other things. Antonio Brown might be taking one step closer to joining a team. Cam Newton might be heading out west, but we start this morning with where Cam apparently isn't going. And that, contrary to rumors, seems to be New England. A recent report says the Patriots have no interest in acquiring the former MVP quarterback. Bill Belichick has a plan, and it's looking like that plan is Jarrett Stidham, whose next start in the NFL will be his first start in the NFL. Nick, start with you. Is Belichick making a mistake by not pursuing Cam Newton?
Well, as someone that doesn't root for the Patriots, I love this news, Jenna. So that, I think, answers the question for you. Please, Bill, please go with the Hoyer-Stidham two-headed monster. Let's see how that works out. Let's see what you can spin into gold there instead of doing what it would take to get a 30-year-old former league MVP on your roster. Now, the Patriots, your beloved Patriots Wilds, are in an odd position for a couple of reasons. One, for the first time in 20 years, they don't have their quarterback situation settled. But two, for the first time in nearly 20 years, they also are in a really bad cap position. They've got over $20 million in dead money on their cap, which is a situation they never find themselves in. $14 million of that, of course, is Tom Brady, but a couple million is Antonio Brown, a couple million is Michael Bennett, and then there's a few other guys that round out to where it gets like $22 million. And they've got three offensive linemen making eight figures a year, $10 million plus. Their secondary takes up 30% of their salary cap in 2020 with Stephon Gilmore making nearly $20 million. So the Pats, we laughed at the Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, by the way, let me remind you, for only having $200 of cap space. The Pats don't have much more. The Patriots only have around $2 million in cap space. So if they did want to go after Cam Newton Wilds, they would have to borrow from the future and rework some deals. So, yeah, I think it's a mistake. I understand why they're not doing it, Kevin. And as a Chiefs fan, it delights me that this is the path they're on.
Yeah, I didn't like a lot of what I just heard because a lot of it made sense, unfortunately, Nick. So I'm just going to say, whatever we need to do financially to get Cam on the team, we should do it. And here's why. Sometimes life is confusing. But you know what? Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes your first reaction is the right one. Malcolm Gladwell made a ton of money off the book Blink for this. So should the Patriots get Cam Newton? Yes. Cam Newton is 30 years old. The best is yet to come. You know who else the Patriots got when he was 30 years old? Randy Moss. Randy Moss's last year in Oakland, he had 42 catches, a little 500 yards, and three touchdowns. Then he comes to New England. Should we get Randy Moss? Of course we should get Randy Moss. Comes to New England, 98 receptions, almost 1,500 yards, and 23 touchdowns. So if we can make the money work, I feel like Cam is a no-brainer. We're not on, we've got the best is yet to come with Cam. We haven't seen the best, and he already won an MVP. So, Bill, I trust in you. Don't get me wrong. But, Jenna, I really, really, really want to make the money work and have Cam in a Patriots uniform.
Oh, but you don't trust in Bill. You kind of trust in him, but you kind of don't.
No, I do.
Shouldn't we assume that Bill Belichick has a plan? He's always had a plan. Has anyone argued that he isn't the best coach, NFL coach of all time? There's something that he's got up his sleeve that he seems to know that the rest of us don't. But let me just ask you, you think they're making a mistake by not going after Cam?
You know, Jenna, I do think that they're making a mistake by not going after Cam, because what is there to lose if you do go after Cam? Yes, everything that Nick said, totally understand that, and he is absolutely correct. But you can find a way to make it work. Teams have always found a way to make money work if they want to acquire talent that they don't have. And when you look at Cam Newton, he provides that spark right away. Now, Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer, they're seeing a lot more of them than we have ever saw of them. And so they know where their progression is, specifically Stidham, who they're saying is they're going to be their number one guy. But I just don't think that, I can't say Bill Belichick does not know what he's doing. But what I can say is this is uncharted waters for Bill Belichick. He's been really good at acquiring other free agents for different positions, whether it be on the defensive side of the ball or skill guys or just plucking guys from other organizations and inserting them into theirs and making them play. Well, for the first time in his New England stint, he's having to plug in at the quarterback position. And we saw his notes. We see how important he and the value that he puts at that position. He gets this wrong and nothing that he has planned works. And so I can see him erring on the side of caution in his why, but I don't agree with it.
Such a good point, Greg. So much line on this decision for Bill Belichick to make the right one here, especially since everyone's going to compare it to who just left. Jarrett Stidham's thrown four passes. One of those passes was a pick six. He doesn't have any touchdowns. He doesn't have any starts. Does this mean, though, Nick, let me ask Nick first, are the Patriots locked in on Stidham Hoyer as the heir apparent to Tom Brady?
Well, right now, I mean, those are the guys on the roster, along with Cody Kessler. And I understand Pat fans might say, once upon a time, a sixth-round pick who didn't play or barely played at all his rookie season came in year two and turned into Tom Brady. That is a true story. It is also close to a fairy tale story because it never happens other than the one time it did. Here's a list for you. Since Tom Brady, so we're talking about over 20 years, every single quarterback drafted in the fourth round or later, here is your top three. Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, David Garrard. The third best fourth round or later quarterback drafted in the last 20 years is David Garrard. You simply don't find franchise guys in the late rounds of the draft. I know people will be like, Montana was a third and Russell Wilson was a third. And Drew Brees was a second. You occasionally find franchise guys after the first round, in the second or third. But once you get to the fourth round or beyond, the quarterbacks you draft there, we have a name for them. They're called backups. Jarrett Stidham is a backup quarterback who might be forced to become a starting quarterback. Again, three most successful fourth round or later picks post Tom Brady. Dak, who's been a wild success story. Kirk Cousins has been a wild success story. And then you get to the David Garrard, Matt Castle level careers. And those are the best of them. Not listing the dozens who didn't make it to their second contract, Wilds. I'd be incredibly anxious if I were you as a Patriots fan, not about your ability to win the division, because maybe the defense does that, but about your ability to actually have a real live quarterback on your roster.
I'm trying to find silver linings. Here's what I'm grasping onto. Jalen Hurts, the Nick Saban Belichick connection, that's something. Then I'm like, I guess I'll just fall in love with Stidham. When can I get the Stidham jerseys? But then I saw this tweet that Mike Reese, I was pretty much on the Stidham train. I saw this, Mike Reese sent a tweet out the other day, and it was a quote from Matthew Slater. And it said, Cam is going to lead us. I feel great. And I looked at my phone, and I was like, oh my gosh, it happened. I can't believe it. We're good. And he was talking about Joe Judge's replacement, Cam McCord. So I was like, I guess I haven't emotionally let go of the Cam Newton hope. That's where I wanted. This is it. I know Cam is up for the challenge. I was like, oh my God. It was an emotional roller coaster there for me, Jenna. So look, I still trust in Bill Belichick, but my faith is wavering a little bit. A little bit.
Wilds, every day is an emotional roller coaster for you. I got to be honest. Great. I feel bad. Greg, quickly, we have a little bit of time left before we got to go to break. You think something's going to happen here? Or at this point, should we all be set on Stidham Hoyer as where the Patriots are heading?
I'm still hopeful that something happens for Cam's sake and for the Patriots' sake. And I get it. Once you've acquired a guy, whether they're in the fourth round or whatever, you really have to try to make it work. You owe it not only to your scouts, scouting department, but to your fans to see, is this the guy? And Jenna, you made a great point. You said Tom Brady leaving puts a lot of pressure on Bill Belichick to get this one right. It's not so much about the winning. It's the play at that position can Bill Belichick get this right? Because if he gets this right, we know he's done it. Everything else is already set. So this is the only puzzle piece that if he inserts correctly, he will be right back where he left off. And the culture is already set, and they can continue to succeed and potentially hoist a Lombardi trophy in the near future. But if you're wrong and you go out and grab a Cam or a Jameis or whomever else, then you look really bad at letting Tom Brady walk out the door. And so I think that's why Bill Belichick is like, you know what? I'm going to play the cards that I have in my hand and let the chips fall where they may.
Time now for our rewarding performance sponsored by Capital One Venture Card. What is in your wallet? Tua Tagovailoa came out and said he is 100% and he could play today. So, Nick, with Tua's hip looking good to go, should he be drafted number one overall?
Well, I think he should be drafted number one overall, even though I do not believe he could play today. I'm happy that Tua is on message at this point. When he sat down next to us at the Super Bowl, I thought he was far, far too honest. And I almost never say that, but I wanted to grab him and be like, start lying to America, Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah, too much. You're too high character. I'm going to give you bad marks, because he was so concerned about his hip. He was so concerned about his MRI. I think Tua probably should sit his rookie season, but I believe the upside is so high, and I believe his talent is so extraordinary. I would still draft him number one, even if he were going to miss his rookie season. So I do think he should go number one, Kevin. I don't believe at all that his hip is 100%.
I don't believe it either, but you know, you look to a quarterback for decision making, and I think they made a brilliant decision. Be like, hey, we have got to market ourselves a little bit better here. I think they know everything is being graded on a curve now. So if Tua says he's 100%, I'm thinking like, well, maybe he's 75. But if he said he's 75%, I'd be like, well, maybe he's 50. So now I'm going to move it forward. I've been quarantined for a while. I've been watching a lot of movies, and I was like, I can't watch another cartoon. Can we just watch a movie with real people? And we watched The Rookie. It was delightful. It was with Dennis Quaid as Jimmy Miller and an old washed-up coach who comes back and gets a shot. And he used to throw like 88. There's a scene, he's like, oh, what did I used to throw? He's like 88. But now he can throw 98. So Tua should come on and be like, hey, I had this idea about The Rookie. Just be like, not only am I 100%, I'm 110%. My hip feels even better than usual. So that way people can be like, wow, he's 110. Tua's 100%. He's ready to go. So Jenna, that's my Dennis Quaid-like rookie take on Tua Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa. I'll give you another one. Little Giants. That's a good one. You should check that out. Hey, I'm with Giants Wild. This feels a little campaigny. But Greg, teams would still be taking a chance no matter what Tua or Tua's people or anyone says. They're still going to be taking a chance because no one's really going to get to bring him in or see him probably before the draft, right?
Yeah, you're going to be taking a chance. And I think what Nick said about him being on the radio show with you guys and being so openly honest and transparent says a lot about integrity. And if anyone has ever been to the combine, oh, you know what? I have. You know, you sit down with these teams and the first thing they want to find out is, are you high character, your integrity? How do you carry yourself? And so with Tua always having done that in the past, yes, teams are going to kind of pick the side of him being honest and open, but he's still a player, and every player who's gone through injuries, excuse me, will say to a coach or say to a team or another teammate, I'm ready. I can play right now. Let's do it. And it's like, we've seen this, we've heard it. We saw him wanting to get back into the game and then getting injured in his last stint as a college professional. As a college player. So you can't take him saying, I can play in the game right now, for what it's worth. It's anyone would say it. That's like Nick said, it's on brand. It's what he's supposed to say right now. But you have to keep in mind, he has always been very open and honest and very transparent when it comes to his health and how he views himself.
It's an emotional topic. We all get choked up, Greg. Totally understandable. All right. We're going to take a turn, play a little game. We're going to call it Drawing a Blank. Let's engage. Here we go. An NFL executive was asked about New England and said it, quote, looks pretty grim. Sorry, Wilds. We had to just say the words just like that. Nick, people counting out the Patriots. Unlike Steph, who makes me put up this Brady picture behind me every morning. I don't know if you noticed that I have to sit with this thing behind me. Other people, though, counting out the Patriots are blank.
I think this will surprise people, my answer. But people counting out the Patriots are fools. Listen, the Patriots are still the prohibitive favorites in the AFC East. Last year, 11 times their defense held the opposition to 14 or fewer points. If you get anything similar to that defensive performance, even with Stidham or Hoyer or a 43-year-old Tom Brady, if he were to still be there, you would be able to compete for 10, 11 wins. And in a league where now all of a sudden there's the expanded playoffs, you have an extra playoff seed to, up for grabs, I would be personally very, very surprised if the Pats aren't in the tournament. Now, much like last year, Greg, I would assume their run in the tournament would be very, very brief and end because of bad quarterback play. But you can't count them out as far as a playoff team. So I say they're fools.
Yeah, for me, it's envious. We all envy the one who always has the success, and we're always looking at them in their success, wishing it were ours. And a lot of executives, as well as a lot of players across the National Football League, are looking at this as an opportunity, specifically in that AFC East, as, man, this is our chance. No more Tom Brady. We can do it. New England is over. And Bill Belichick is sitting there like, nope, this is, he's not a one-band show. I've created a culture. This is who we are. We will sustain ourselves. But yeah, guys are envious. Executives are envious, jealous, whatever word you want to insert. People are tired of seeing the Patriots win because they want it to be them. Right, Nick, in Kansas City?
Well, I don't know. I'm not really envious of much anymore. Kevin, I'll let you go. But, I mean, we're the champion. So, I mean, I feel great about where we're sitting.
All right.
Me personally. Go ahead, Wilds.
So Jenna, I'm going to go with Storch because last night I watched the Scott Storch Manny Fresh battle on Instagram while Nick was watching LeBron win in Cleveland.
It was delightful.
And here's why I'm going with Storch. Did you watch it? So it was a lopsided victory. And this is why I think Scott Storch is like Bill Belichick. Yeah, everybody knows he's got hits and he's had hits for 20 years. That's the same with Scott Storch. And then I was like, I guess I got to start following Scott Storch on Instagram. So I start following Scott Storch on Instagram, and then he's like, here I am with the piano. Bang, 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 hit the drums, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, wow, that's a hit. Who's ready to get on that one? Jarrett Stidham? If Jarrett Stidham gets on that beat, that's a hit. So I'm going with Scorch. No, it's not Scorch. Storch. Scott Storched.
You almost nailed the dismount.
And he makes it.
You were so close, and then you
said
Scorch.
He did. No. He nailed it. On to the Chargers now. Head coach Anthony Lynn was asked about Cam Newton and said, quote, if he's healthy, he's going to be a good quarterback for somebody. Nick, let's go ahead and overanalyze and assume Lynn is looking at Cam. The Chargers' Super Bowl chances with Cam would be blank.
I'm going to say Mahomes-based, and here's why. I think the Chargers, if they had Cam, can be an extraordinary football team. We saw this team win 12 games 2 years ago. You've got the same weapons. You would hope they have a healthy Derwin James. So why am I saying Mahomes based? I don't think the Chargers could make the Super Bowl out of the wild card spot, having to win three consecutive road playoff games to get there. But if something happens to Patrick, we saw him have his kneecap dislocated last year, and the AFC West opens up, to me, the Chargers would be the next in line, not only in the division, but then they and the Ravens would be potentially the two best teams in the conference if something happens to Patrick Mahomes. So just because they're in a division with the Chiefs, you can't immediately put them there, but I think they would become a top three team in the conference. So I say, Greg, it's Mahomes-based.
I would say it's realistic. If you insert a Cam Newton, a player who's had success in this league, can get the ball to guys outside the perimeter, both intermediate and down the field, which he's never really had the skill guys that the Chargers would provide, it's very realistic that this could be a Super Bowl a contending team. Now, they, in my opinion, they've always played the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes very well, with, I believe, just the one game. They've always played them and battled them really well, both at home and on the road. So this is a team that could be very scary, pending who's under center.
Yeah, that's, I agree. I'm going with Cam-tastic, Greg. Here's why. You look at who the Chargers have to play next year, there's a lot of great quarterbacks, and I think you need a guy like Cam Newton under center to get it done. You got to play the Bengals. Imagine if Joe Burrow beats you. Ugh. Then you got to play Patrick Mahomes. You got to play powerhouse Jarrett Stidham. Then you're playing Matt Ryan a few times. You're playing Brady. You're playing Breeze. And you're playing the Panthers. You're not playing Matt Ryan a few times. Then you got to play the Panthers. Teddy Bridgewater can beat you. Cam will win that game for you. So I'm going Cam-tastic.
Guys, I used to be the quirkiest one on this show. And then Wilds came. Now you can have
quirky.
It.
I love it. No. Just because I mentioned Scott Storch once.
No, it's a compliment.
The rookie with Dennis Quaid.
It's a compliment.
It's a good movie.
On to another free agent, Antonio Brown. His cousin and Ravens receiver, Hollywood Brown, posted this picture of himself, AB, and Lamar Jackson. Practicing football, not practicing social distancing, as we can see. But Nick, AB working out with Lamar is blank.
Anxiety inducing, because the Ravens are the second best team in the conference. And if Antonio Brown were to be able to be reinstated by the NFL and get back on the field, he's always produced at a Hall of Fame level. And he is the perfect type of receiver for Lamar, because he can take those intermediate over the middle passes and do real damage with them. So if you're a fan of any team in the AFC other than Baltimore, it would be anxiety inducing if he went to the Baltimore Ravens, Greg.
This is glitter. This is complete glitter. And let me explain. Glitter is one of those things that you see it and you're dazzled by it. You're like, oh my God, that's so pretty. I love it. And the moment you go to close to the glitter, you look down at your shirt and it's all over you. And now what you just thought was so dazzling and so loving and pretty, you're disgusted by it. You're like, you're trying to get it off you. And then the more you wipe, it gets everywhere.
Amazing.
And now it's spilled everywhere. Now you hate the fact that you acquired and you've ever come into contact with this glitter. But if it never gets
Greg.
On you, you love it. It's glitter.
I mean,
I love it.
That was, I had fool's gold, which was basically like the junior varsity version of what Greg just said. That was fantastic, Jenna. I just move on.
Great.
Greg's thing was perfect.
Especially if you have two little girls who are obsessed with glitter. Looks pretty, not pretty. On to some hoops
or
now.
Or three girls.
Where Michael Jordan was voted by fans as the best college basketball player of all time. Well, this had Nick in a tizzy all day yesterday. Nicholas, MJ being named the GOAT of college basketball is
here we go.
Blank.
Buckle up, America.
A total disgrace. I mean, I'm excited for the next ESPN polls about the greatest white American basketball player ever. I expect Jordan to win that. The tallest basketball player ever, I expect Jordan to win that. The greatest minor league baseball player ever, I expect Jordan to win that. This is why I don't... all the folks, all the Xennials, the 17-year-olds that are in my mentions all the time trying to argue with them about Jordan versus LeBron, you dopes have been brainwashed. And the brainwashing, by the way, is about to hit 10 on the Richter scale, with this 10-hour Jordan propaganda fest that's about to be forced down our throats, to where you guys said he's the greatest college player ever, the greatest collegiate player ever is Michael Jordan. Get the hell out of here with that. Greg, go. It's an outrage. It's a total disgrace.
I love it. I love it, but I agree 100%. I agree 100%. They're misinformed. Like, you haven't really watched college basketball. And I'm not saying Michael Jordan wasn't a great college basketball player, because he was. But you have the great Luol Cinder. Like, come on. Like, what he did at UCLA, and Larry Bird, like all these guys, they were great. And Michael Jordan was fantastic. But to say Michael Jordan is the best college basketball player of all time, you're misinformed. And I think a lot of people misinterpret what is being asked of them. Not the greatest player. And just because he's the greatest player doesn't mean he was that great in college, because he really wasn't. He was special, but he wasn't the greatest player.
Nick, I think everyone's busy. I'm not putting a ton of stock into Instagram polls and Twitter polls. And I think if there was a poll that popped up on your Instagram and it said, who was the best player in 1986? LeBron James, who was one, or Kevin Wilds, who was eight, and I was obviously better, you would still vote for LeBron. So I just think it's, I still think it's just, people are busy. I'm not putting too much stock into it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I put a lot of stock into it. And so can I please give you, because if, let's do a Mount Rushmore real quick. Maybe Jordan makes the North Carolina Mount Rushmore, but not the college basketball Mount Rushmore. Here are your four greatest college basketball players of all time, and you cannot argue against it. Luol Cinder, he played 3 years. What did he do? Oh, he won Player of the Year all 3 years. He won Final Four MVP all 3 years. And he won all three national championships. He lost twice. Both games were by 2 points. Then there's Bill Russell. He averaged 20 and 20. He was a back-to-back champion, back-to-back player of the year, and won tournament MVP. How about Bill Walton, who had two undefeated seasons, three-time player of the year, three-time in three seasons, and two Final Four MVPs. And then the big old Oscar Robertson, who averaged for his career in college 33-15-5. That was his career average. Took Cincinnati to back-to-back Final Fours. Couldn't get over the hump and win the title. And he won three Players of the Year awards. I think it was the Elda Ed Helms Award back then. That's your Mount Rushmore. Jordan is not even close. He's in not even in a different room. He's in a different house. And so, kids, I can't believe I'm saying this. Young people, the problem usually is you don't vote. On stuff like this, maybe you shouldn't vote. Maybe the problem is too many of you are voting, young people, because this is an outrage. It's an outrage.
If anybody was still asleep in Nick's household right now, let me tell you, the entire neighborhood is happy and wide awake.
My daughter's, my six-year-old, is voting on one of these polls right now, skewing the results.
She would have been sleeping had you not answered this question. We got to take a break. Coming up, Saints All Pro defensive end Cam Jordan's going to join the show next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, look who's joining us now. Saints All Pro defensive end Cam Jordan, who walked away from his breakfast to sit down and speak with us. For that, we are so grateful. Thank you very much, Cam Jordan. Obviously, you're joining us under some very unique circumstances. I want to start just by asking, how are you? How are your friends and family? What have you been doing during this time?
We're great. In terms of how is health, I mean, health in the house is wonderful. Everybody in the house is active. I got a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old. You know, my wife is overly active, coming from Rutgers, playing basketball over there. She's a West Coast kid. So everything we just do it in the backyard now. So, I mean, if it means, you know, push-ups, jumping jacks, squats, everybody in the house is on this routine. We've got our own little ladder outside in the hallway, step ladder, of course. I'm getting my son's feet work right. I don't know if he ever had a chance to, but every day we're on this ladder. If anything, I know we're going to be running some crispy routes very soon.
That's awesome, Cam. And listen, you are, in addition to coming off your best season as a pro, you are coming off your best season in the media. You're all over everywhere doing sideline reporting. You're in other networks' promos. So you obviously have a very bright post-career, you know, second career. But I want you to talk about you for a second, because so much of this interview is going to be about your team and your quarterback, your division. The last 3 years, you got 40 sacks. You, Aaron Donald, Chandler Jones, the only people on that list. You're going into year 10. Your dad played 13 years, if I'm not mistaken. We had it on the bottom of the screen. You have 87 career sacks. You're 50 away from 137. Why does 137 matter? Everybody with 137 or more is in the Hall of Fame if they're eligible. How much more do you think? Do you think you got 50 more sacks in you? Are you going to play longer than your dad's 13 years? What are some of your personal goals still out there? And do you start envisioning the gold jacket potentially one day? Talk about yourself for a moment.
Yeah, when you talk about what I want to do, I've always said I wanted to make myself known as a pass rusher in the league. I wanted to make myself known as a run stopper in the league. I wanted to be the most complete all-around defensive end in the game. And I feel like I've done that to this point. Anyways, you talk about heading to year 10. I have a goal. I mean, if I can get, you know, another double-digit sack situation under my belt, I feel like 100 sacks in 10 years is noteworthy. I don't know if I even knew about the 137 sack threshold. But when you talk about striving for the next 6 years, I have every plan to do just that. In my mind, I have anywhere from 6 to 8 years in left in the bank.
Wow.
So I'll reach my year 15 mark and we'll go from there.
Cam, when you heard about Tom Brady joining the division, what went through your mind and what's your process like going to be when you used to prepare for Jameis and now you're preparing for Tom Brady?
I mean, when you talk about Tom Brady being one of the GOATs, I mean, if it's not Drew Brees, it's Tom Brady. So it's somebody that I know that I've sacked before, at least. I think it's probably been maybe just once. But we're going to have to change that this year. When you talk about trying to put pressure on him, I mean, he does a phenomenal job at everything he does. He is one of the last remaining pocket quarterbacks, but he is the greatest pocket quarterback in terms of winning championships. So everything that you know that he is and everything that Tom Brady has been at the Patriots, I can only imagine what he's going to do in Tampa Bay. Now he has Mike Evans and Godwin.
Hey, Cam, your head coach, Sean Payton, made some headlines this week. We were talking about it earlier when he said Drew Brees, quote, announced he's coming back for his final season. He walked it back a little bit, said he was a dummy for saying that, not sure if he should have, and he's not sure about what Drew Brees' plans are. But how do you think we should interpret those comments?
Yeah, you talk about Sean being in quarantine the last 2 weeks. That's a lot of thinking. That's a lot of plays he's worried on. in my mind, every year you deal with some rumor, either Sean's leaving or Drew's retiring. I've been dealing with that for the last, 6 years of my 9-year career? Until it happens, everybody knows that Drew's going to be playing at the highest level that he can. And everybody knows his percentage of completions he's had this past year. Everybody talks about how many touchdowns he throws versus how many, you know, how many interceptions he doesn't throw. You know how great Drew is. And now he's got Mike Thomas the last 4 years, and he's only going to hit an even better stride, if possible, in the next couple years. So it's all hearsay until it happens.
Cam, I got a question for you. Let's just assume this year goes exactly how you have planned out in your mind's eye, and you guys win the Super Bowl, and then Drew does end up walking away. He's a champ, 2-time champion, holds all the records. He says, I've done enough here. We keep hearing the heir apparent is Taysom Hill. And I have immense respect for Taysom Hill as a do-it-all guy. But Taysom Hill in his career has completed 6 more passes than you and me, which means he's completed 6 passes in the NFL. What am I not seeing that are you seeing it? Like, how can it be that the heir apparent is the guy on kick coverage who occasionally breaks out and plays slot receiver? What am I missing about Taysom Hill?
And can return kicks. And
yes, yeah,
can do it all. Being tight end formation, halfback formation, and a slot. He can do it all. And he can pass. Everything that you know about Taysom Hill is, you know, he's got a meticulous work effort. And I mean, so if Sean has faith in him, that's what we have to do. I don't know if we've ever really been in the league to say, hey, this is the heir apparent, just because we've always had Drew Brees and playing at his best. So for there to be an heir apparent, I'll just trust the Saints organization. You know, we had Teddy Bridgewater as a backup, and when he took over for a 5-game stretch, he went undefeated. So if Sean says, hey, this is our next quarterback, then I'm going to reside in the words of Sean and say, hey, that's our heir apparent. Now, I did you know, read the same article saying that, you know, he was going to have the same Army Swiss knife role that he had last year. So does that mean we're going to pick up a 30 quarterback? Again, I'm just going to relay information to the Saints up top. I don't have to worry about that. That's above my pay grade. My pay grade is pretty nice.
Cam
makes a lot of money. He makes a lot of money.
You set the record last year. You've sacked Matt Ryan 18 times. No player has sacked a quarterback that many times. What's your relationship like with Matt Ryan?
Sadly, it's non-existent. I feel like we should be way better friends than just this, hey, I only see you twice a year. I mean, I'm not saying I need an invite to the cookout, but I feel like he has maybe my invitation to my cookout. I need him. You know, I need everybody in the NFC South. I feel like Atlanta has been great to me over these last 9 years. You know, Carolina has been great to me. I feel like Tampa Bay has been even better to me. And then I look at the numbers, I'm like, Atlanta's my best friend. And then they're my rival. So I need them. Hopefully they need me. It's probably not a two-way street there.
Hey, Cam, you play with Drew Brees. You're now going to play against Tom Brady. As a player who has seen both of them, who do you think is going to play longer in the NFL? Who's going to outlast who?
And it's a battle of attrition. I mean, in my mind, I'd never have to worry about Drew retiring because I feel like, you know, they're always fighting. Like Tom and Drew are fighting for the all-time records, whether it's all-time receptions, whether it's all-time TDs. Somebody's got to outlast somebody. And I do know Drew's a little bit younger than Tom. So I feel like we have a little competitive age of time on our hands. And, I mean, at this point, Drew's playing at such a high rate. I feel like with Tom Brady signing a two-year deal, I know I've got Drew for at least that long.
Cam, I'm always amazed by your energy, positivity, optimism, even, you know, in the just days after this season ends, particularly because you're on a very short list of guys who, as far as you've lost four playoff games on the final play of the game. Like, I've never seen anything like it. Your first playoff game ever, I think, was the Vernon Davis game. You guys are up with 9 seconds left. He catches a touchdown. We all know the last 3 years, the Minneapolis Miracle, OT the Rams, OT last year against Minnesota. How are you able to turn the page and keep this infectious energy and enthusiasm when you've dealt with some heartbreaking ways for your season to end?
I mean, I think about 2011 rookie year. Woo, that was a big Cam right there. I had to think about how heavy I was back then. But you talk about my rookie year. I guess I didn't know Vernon could cry on cue because, I mean, he was crying immediately after the game. And then, you know, I've seen him on tape just like cry and then stop crying. I'm like, oh, was this a sham? Was this an act? Anyway. The way that he took that game from us rookie year, you look at it and it's like, all right, I need to win one. I mean, we have the talent. I need to win one. You talk about what happened respectively the last 3 years. It's each time it's like something else happens. There's something that we don't, you know, the intangible of the game is like something other than the 11 men on the football field affected. But at the same time, I look at it, I'm like, hey, if we could only do, you know, if we could get back two plays, if we could get back one play, if we could only take the last couple seconds of this game and make it, you know, where we created a stand, what is that change? What is that difference? And to want to be a part of that difference, that's the exact same feel you get in this entire locker room. We get into the locker room, it's like, look, we're that much closer to where we want to be. The object of this game is winning. The object of this game is a Super Bowl. I don't have that yet. And so there's no reason for me not to be more hungry each and every time we take to the field.
Cam, you did a great interview with The Athletic last year where you named every quarterback, or you tried to name every quarterback you've ever sacked in your career. And in the interview, they talked about a wish list. Have you updated your wish list, or who's on your current quarterback sacking wish list?
I don't know if I have a quarterback sacking wish list. Honestly, when you talk about quarterbacks, they come as they go. But I do know the NFC South, which I've been a part of for nine years, has at least amassed 30 of my sacks, 40 of my sacks. So I'm just going to rely on everybody in NFC South to keep that same energy. Now, all the other quarterbacks that have happened, I do appreciate them, but I knew no six games out of my, 16 game schedule is coming from the NFC South. So I'm just going to rely on that. Now, we talked about how many quarterbacks I sacked. I definitely needed like some hints and clues. I was like, oh, I remember when he was over at this team and when he was there and what year was that? What game was that? That was a heck of an interview just to try and think about that. And I probably rattled off more quarterbacks than I really thought I had known. So when you talk about a wish list, I got to get young Mahomes. And I think Lamar would probably be next.
No,
I need Mahomes. I don't know. Look, I've seen what Lamar has done to defensive ends on the outside. I've been a defensive end in his limited role when Flacco was there trying to turn the corner. And I feel like that is one of two quarterbacks to every turn the corner. I still need to sack Russell Wilson in a regular season game. I think I've gotten him in playoffs. I don't know if I've actually gotten him. I've hit him plenty of times. Somehow he's like turned, like curled up to a ball, like hit his offensive lineman, gained regained his balance and taken off. I mean, I've definitely hit him at an angle, and I think I like sort of clipped him, but he got yards. He got like a yard and a half. So he's really on my wish list in terms of just the competitor that Russell Wilson is. He's probably up there. I'm still kicking myself in the back for never being able to sack Peyton Manning for some reason. I feel like these pure quarterback, pocket quarterbacks are the ones that you should get when you have this chance. But
well, I think he's going to be playing golf pretty soon. You're going to get him out on the golf course. Just come up from behind. He'll never even know what happened. And you can mark that down, put that on your wish list. You're going to have to stick around and settle a debate for us. We're not calling it what it is, Nick, about whether Tom Brady should have given Chris Godwin anything for the number 12 to be discussed next on First Things First. Back here with Saints All-Pro defensive end Cam Jordan, and it is time for Stories to Start Your Morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. So yesterday, Cam, on the show, we had a little debate about this. Tom Brady didn't give his new Bucks wideout Chris Godwin any compensation for the number 12 jersey, but TB12 did post on Godwin's Instagram saying, much appreciated, very grateful, humbled, ready to get to work. Cam, you can't buy much with just those words. Not that much you can purchase. Would you have asked Brady for something for your jersey number? You were in his shoes?
I guess he's a wide receiver, so he just gave him the wide receiver quarterback discount with the, hey, up my receptions. I'm just going to assume that's a like low-key bribe. But meanwhile, if it was me, I'm like, hey, I need 12 Tom Brady signed jerseys. It's perfectly fine. I don't need direct compensation. Oh. I've got some auctions and charities that I want to add to, and then the other six I'm going to sell online. What?
I love the idea. Brilliant. Of Cam like logging in. Cam, you're on eBay, Tom Brady jerseys.
No doubt.
I think he gave him tens of millions of dollars because I think he's going to turn him into Amari Cooper. And he's going to have a huge deal. Maybe it's with the Bucks, maybe it's not, but I think he's going to follow the Deion Branch path and get paid, and Tom Brady's going to hook him up with tens of millions of dollars, Nick.
Yeah, this is an outrage for multiple reasons, because Tom Brady is going to cost Chris Godwin money on both ends of this deal. He costs him money in his jersey by not at least... Chris Godwin is going to make made 600 grand last year. Cam Jordan didn't roll out of bed for that. Like, the fact that Brady couldn't split him off with a brand new car, at the very least, one of those watches Odell Beckham Jr. was wearing on the field last year, something cool. Oh. So he cost him money there. And I totally disagree with your take, Wilds. I think Chris Godwin's numbers are going to go down. Jameis Winston might be bad for your blood pressure, but he's good for your receiving numbers because he throws it all around the field. Brady's going to be dinking and dunking and throwing to the tight end and the running backs. He's probably going to cost Godwin $30 million in potential offseason money. So this is a bad job by Tom Brady on both ends, and I'm really disappointed in him, Jenna.
That is a take, Nick. All right, let's move on to Tua Tagovailoa now. The quarterback said that he's feeling 100% after his hip injury and could play today. Cam, you think Tua will be drafted number one overall with this news?
That's to be decided. I mean, in my mind, from all the mocks that I've seen, from everything that I know of, plus being down in Louisiana, I must reserve that for a LSU quarterback, for a guy who said he looked up to Drew Brees. When you look up to the GOAT, GOAT things happen. So I'm gonna say that's I feel like he's going to be top 10 for sure. And I'm just going to leave it at that. So if he's number one, I did not say it. But I'm going to say it's reserved for another guy.
I think this is brilliant marketing. I feel like he should come out and say he's 110%. So the curve can go down to him being 100%. But I'm not sure I actually believe that he's 100%. What about you?
I don't believe he's 100%, but I draft him number one overall, even if he wasn't. I think his upside is the highest of any quarterback in this draft. With respect to the LSU guy, Joe Burrow, I like Joe a lot. I think Joe's basement is a lot higher than Tua's, but his ceiling's a lot lower. Even if Tua Jenna needed to redshirt a year, I'd still take him number one overall.
All right, let's end on some hoops, guys. With the NBA on hiatus, Miami Heat star Jimmy Butler has been utilizing his time very wisely, saying, "I ain't been doing nothing but drinking wine and working out." Me too, except for the wine part. Cam, we don't have a ton of time left. Is this the same for you? Workouts and wine during this time?
I'm gonna leave mine as chefing and wine. I'm taking over a lot of the meals from breakfast to dinner. I get like a little slot of time for a little bit of rehab. So definitely working on my core muscles. That adductor push is what you're seeing right there. But yeah, when it comes down to it, I'm definitely cooking for the fam at a higher rate than I have been. And yeah, workouts get real. You get in trouble in my house, we're doing wall squats. Everybody.
Wow. See, now, I knew you and I had something in common. Cam Jordan, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Love your stories. It's all great. We're back here tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. Stay safe. Have a great day, everyone.